Hello! Welcome to Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Weldon. Today's episode is called The Great Pooka Rescue, an adaptation of a traditional Irish story written for you by Daniel Hines. Today, we'd like to say a special thank you to Emily and Octavia and their family, Emma and Mia and their family, Stanley and his family from Winnipeg, Canada, Sydney, Kiri, and Elise and their family from Connecticut, Eloise and Nora and the rest of the Rocca family, Liam, Henry, and James and their family, Bridget, Elise, and Dale and their family, Simon and his family from Biel, Switzerland, Nora, Ireland, and Grayson and the rest of the Buter Grimm crew, and Owen and Hank and their family. Thank you so much, Hank, Owen, Grayson, Ireland, Nora, Simon, Dale, Elise, Bridget, James, Henry, Liam, Nora, Eloise, Elise, Kiri, Sydney, Stanley, Mia, Emma, Octavia, and Emily. You are part of what makes it possible for us to continue to produce fun new stories for our listeners. Time is running out to vote for us for Best Kids and Family Podcast in the first ever iHeartRadio Podcast Awards. If you'd like to vote for us, you can do so on the iHeartRadio website, or you can visit storiespodcast.com/vote, and that will take you to the right page. Voting is open now until January 6th, and you can vote up to 5 times a day, every day. We'll be at the show. Wish us luck.
Hey, grown-ups.
On the Nintendo Switch system, you can team up with friends in Super Mario Bros. Wonder.
Where you can meet talking flowers.
Life's full of surprises.
And where piranha plants sing.
And where Mario, Luigi, and Peach turn into elephants.
Wowie Zowie!
And where this announcer turns into a...
super tiny announcer!
That's not in the game.
Sorry, got a little excited. Nintendo Switch, the home of Mario and Friends. Game rated E for everyone. Game and system sold separately.
Thanks. Enjoy the episode. The Great Pooka Rescue. Once upon a time, in a cozy Irish village, there was a tavern. It was a simple thing, really. The walls were hand-sawn timber, the foundation rough-cut stone. It wasn't much to look at by day, but at night, it came alive with music. It was called O'Cullen's, because that's who owned it. The couple Constance and Thomas O'Cullen. They'd been married for 20 years, and they had settled comfortably into their lives like a favorite old chair. Constance tended to the counter, serving drinks and making change with an endless stream of friendly chatter. Thomas worked the stove, cooking his famous stews and chowders for dinner. Their policy was that musicians always ate for free, so O'Cullen's never lacked for good players. And at night, once the dinner was served and the dancing had begun, no matter how wild the crowd got, no one sang louder or danced harder than Constance and Thomas themselves. It was a good tavern, the best if you asked its patrons, but it did have a couple of peculiar touches. For instance, if you looked around, tucked here and nestled there, you'd find bunches of sweet hay, always laid fresh. And by the entrance, on the right-hand side, there was a stone bench. But on the left-hand side, there was a post capped with an iron clover. And the last was maybe most peculiar of all. Each night, by the light of the moon, Constance would go out and lay some food on the strange stone bench. "Oh, Connie, darling," Thomas would say. Connie was his nickname for her. "How is your pooka tonight?" "Oh, Tommy, me love," she'd reply. Tommy was her nickname for him. "You know he's lovely as always." If you've never heard of a pooka before, don't worry. Not many have. They're an old piece of magic, only found out in the country, away from the metal smell of cities. They usually appear as a horse, but can shift into goats or dogs or even lumpy little humans. Some people feared them, since they were known to take folks on wild and unexpected rides into the fae. But most people didn't believe in them at all, even back then. But Connie, she was a believer. She laid the sweet hay so the pooka could sniff them out. She made the bench and post because friendly pookas sit on the right side of doors, while mean pookas prefer the left. And of course, she put out food. Pookas were rumored to be magnificent eaters, so Connie always tucked aside something tasty. Tommy teased her gently for it, since he didn't believe, but he was always kind. He'd even helped her fit the post with its iron clover. Of course, Connie never had any proof pukas were real. She was often told by her patrons that it was probably some wild animal eating the food she put out. She was warned that it was likely wolves. Hunters had been taking all the deer from the forest, and the local pack was growing hungry and desperate. Still, these were her beliefs, and she wouldn't let a little teasing stop her. After all, if a little teasing was all it took to kill a belief, well, it wasn't much of a belief at all, she reckoned. So in this way, Connie and Tommy O'Cullen carried on, singing and dancing and happy as could be, until one early winter night, when the first snow of the year was beginning to fall. They had just closed the tavern for the night. It was late, closer to dawn than dusk, and Connie was headed outside with a small crock of that supper's chowder. She had poured it fresh from the kettle, and it steamed in the snowy night air like a great cottony plume. Stepping outside, she laid the bowl on the bench and peered off into the woods surrounding the tavern. "Oi, Mr. Pooka, your dinner is ready!" she called out playfully. There was no reply, but more gentle snow. It fell in fat flakes as fluffy as feathers. The moon was high and full and made the newly fallen powder shine and twinkle like a sky that was nothing but stars. It was so beautiful that Connie walked into the yard, admiring the view. She was so enjoying the sight that she didn't even notice the pack of wolves that came slinking from the forest until she heard the first low growl. She whirled and saw a wolf. It was skinny-looking, hungry-looking. There was a snarl from behind, and she spun and saw another, just as starved as the first. She hollered and spun as more wolves appeared. The orderly part of her brain tried to count them, but it was impossible with the way they darted in and out, the way they prowled about the dark, only their bright white eyes and bright white teeth gleaming in the moonlight. "Tommy! Tommy, help!" she called. But she knew Tommy was in the basement cleaning the dishes and would never hear her. The snow, so beautiful just a moment before, seemed to steal the sound from the air. Her voice sounded small and weak and trapped. One of the wolves lunged and got a mouthful of her dress. She tried to tug free, but the material ripped away in the beast's strong jaws. She kicked at another, and it came away with her boot. "Help!" she cried, the circle of wolves growing tighter around her. "Help!" Suddenly there was a howl, one that made all the wolves stand still and perk up their ears. The howl came again, seemingly from every direction. The wolves bared their teeth and snarled. From the woods, a great hound burst forth. It was black with white paws and a white blaze on its forehead, and it was bigger than any three of the wolves put together. It charged the beasts and sent them scrambling away. Connie looked on, confused and unsure. For a moment, she thought she may be safe, but only for a moment. Already, the wolves were getting over their initial fear of the hound and prowled closer again, spreading to surround it. Before she could think, the hound shot under her legs. She started to shout, but before she could, in the space of just a few seconds, she found herself riding a horse. The dog had transformed. No, Connie realized, not a dog. Not a horse either. A pooka. It had saved her. But now it intended to take her for a ride. "No, no, no," she said, but it was too late. The pooka launched itself into the air, jumping over the snapping and snarling wolves, and then shot off into the velvet dark of the forest. In the doorway of the tavern, mouth agape, stood Tommy. He had come up just in time to watch the pooka shift from dog to horse and carry his wife away. He started to chase after them, but the wolves spun, catching his scent, and he was forced to dive back into the tavern, kicking the door shut as a wolf thudded against it. He sat, heart pounding, catching his breath. What now? He thought. What now? Unfortunately for Tommy, no one believed his story about the pooka. They thought the wolves had taken his wife, as they'd taken others during hungry seasons. They didn't believe him, but they loved him, so they helped him search. For a week and more, they combed the forest near the tavern, ranging ever further afield. As the days drew on, though, more and more people lost hope, or simply had to return to their own lives. Soon, no one was left looking for Connie, but Tommy himself. He would search all day and much of the night, returning home only to sleep and eat a single meal. The tavern stayed closed, and the town began to wonder if Tommy would ever recover. The more he insisted the Pooka had saved Connie from the wolves, the crazier they believed he was. He soon learned not to talk about it at all, to keep to himself. But that only worried the town even more. Thinking of the Pooka often, Tommy started to place fresh hay, to clean the bench by the door, and to share a little bit of his dinner. He didn't really think the Pooka would return, but it had saved his wife, even if it hadn't brought her back. Tommy's weeks passed in a lurching blur, and it was soon Christmas time. While the rest of the town celebrated and feasted, Tommy searched all day and came home after dark, feeling bitter and defeated. Eyes downcast, body tired, he almost walked right into the giant horse standing in his garden. He yelped and jumped back, but the creature only stared at him. It was black, with white feet and a white blaze on its forehead. "Pooka!" he said, the word curling mist in the cold winter air. The Pooka nodded its hoarse head, and the mist twisted itself into the shape of a goat and galloped into the sky. Eyes wide, Tommy looked back to the Pooka, who beckoned him to get on. "Are you going to take me to me wife?" The Pooka snorted and pawed at the earth. "What do you got to lose, boyo?" Tommy said to himself, swinging up onto the creature's back. "Whoa!" The Pooka leapt forward, surging into the woods faster than any horse ever could. It dodged around trees at breakneck speed, its magical body growing shorter or taller as needed. Tommy clung on desperately as they wound on through the night, the world a queasy blur. His fingers began to cramp and ache, and soon he could feel himself beginning to slip. "Whoa, whoa, hey!" he cried. Hands grasping and finding only air, he tumbled from the Pooka's back, hitting the ground with a thump. Luckily, it was soft moss, deep and comfy as piled carpet. Tommy took advantage of it, using the opportunity to lie there and moan, his head swimming. From nearby came a tinkling little laugh. Tommy sat up with a start. "Who was that?"
"It's just me," said the voice. "You hung on pretty good, young master. Pooka shakes most all off faster."
Tommy blinked his eyes, still recovering from the dizziness of his fall. As his vision slowly pieced itself back together, he was surprised to see a fairy sitting in the clearing in front of him. She was one of the larger fae folk, nearly 2 feet tall with a pixie face and the round, gossamer wings of a dragonfly.
"Where am I?" Tommy asked.
"Near home but not. They link a lot."
Tommy looked around. The light was strangely homey here. The air was warm and welcoming. He was starting to feel better than he had in weeks.
"I'm looking for my wife. Connie is her name. The Pooka took her weeks ago. Have you seen her?"
"Yes, I've met your lovely wife. A more friendly lass I've never seen. We would have had her come home to you, but she's made friends with our lovely queen."
"Connie made friends with the Fairy Queen?" Tommy asked, mouth agape. "How hard did I fall? I must have hit me head."
The fairy giggled again.
"The queen will give her back, me dove, but she'd like to see you prove your love."
"Prove me love?" Tommy moaned. "I've always loved Connie. She's never doubted that."
"You're a good man to your wife, I'm sure, but you must impress the queen, not her."
"How? I don't even know where to find her. Never mind impress her."
"To impress the queen, you must beat strife. To impress the queen, steal back your wife."
Tommy looked up at the stars, shaking his head.
"Lord, but I do love that woman."
"All right. Can you tell me where they are, so I can steal her back?" The fairy smiled a sly smile.
"I'd love to help your way along, but I fear I'm stuck writing my song."
This perked Tommy right up. With all the searching and worrying, he hadn't had much time for singing and dancing lately, and singing and dancing were his favorite.
Stuck with a song, huh?
The fairy nodded. I could finish sooner than I planned, if you'd like to lend a hand.
I'd hate for you to tarry long. Please let me help you with your song.
The fairy giggled and clapped her little hands.
He rhymes!
At times, Tommy agreed.
Well, I've a chorus and a verse, it's true, but a proper song should well have two.
Well, if your song is feeling thinnish, sing it and I'll help you finish.
The fairy nodded, pulling out a tiny, elegant instrument.
I'll sing chorus, verse, and chorus gain, and that's when you can jump on in.
Two in hearts takes daring and proof of well-caring. Be brazen and bold and well tender and true. Prove well you're worthy and give them a story that's dashing and daring and splendorous too. If you end up lonely with no one and only, with no love to share in the warmth of your arms, remember keep going, your heart always showing. You'll soon win a love by your cheer and your charm.
Love's always running, but if one is cunning, you'll help it along or giving it chase. There's thrill in the seeking, but quickly it's peaking. You'll find after all that you're standing in place.
If you end up lonely with no one and only, with no love to share in the warmth of your arms, remember keep going, your heart always showing. You'll soon win a love by your cheer and your charm.
Toorooroi,
toorooroi.
If you end up lonely with no one and only, with no love to share in the warmth of your arms,
remember keep going, your heart always showing. You'll soon win love by your cheer and your charm.
Your voice is lovely as the spring. Was an honor just to hear you sing, Tommy said when she had finished.
And you yourself sing like a dream. Please take a gift with my esteem.
She reached into her tunic and pulled out a pair of dull iron spurs. They were artfully shaped to look like hounds running in a loop, each biting the tail of the one in front of it. Tommy took the spurs and admired them in the moonlight.
Thank you for these spurs, so brawny. But will they help me find me, Connie?
The fairy nodded solemnly, standing up and dusting off her skirt.
When New Year's Eve does true begin, the walls between our worlds grow thin. When the moon is bright, just step outside, wear your spurs, and take a ride.
With that, the fairy giggled again and disappeared. Tommy leapt up after her. He pushed through the woods, but he only ran a few feet before he stumbled into his own backyard.
What is this?
He looked from the woods to the tavern back to the woods with wonder. Finally, he just shook his head.
Fairy magic,
he said, clutching the iron spurs and heading inside.
Enough to give me a headache.
The next few days passed with agonizing slowness, and when the moon finally began to rise on New Year's Eve, Tommy was ready. He stood in his kitchen in his riding clothes, iron hound spurs affixed to his boots. They were round, not sharp, but Tommy didn't think that would matter. Fairies of all kinds hated the touch of iron. Everyone had heard that bit of folklore, whether or not they believed it.
I'm coming for you, Connie,
Tommy said, and his warm breath hung strangely in the kitchen air. After a moment, it formed into a goat and flew out the fireplace.
Well, I guess that means the pooka's here, he said, throwing open the door.
There, in the yard, was the pooka. It was in its horse shape, but bigger than ever. Tommy, a tall man by all accounts, was barely up to its shoulder.
I know the walls are thin tonight, pooka, he said,
swinging onto the creature's back.
I need you to take me to Connie.
The creature immediately bolted into the woods with such speed that Tommy slid off the back. He felt the bouncing rump beneath him one second and nothing but empty air the next. He clutched desperately and got a fistful of the pooka's mane. The creature whinnied wildly in the night and shifted shape, the hair becoming rougher and thicker in Tommy's grip. Suddenly, his heels were skidding over the dirt and he was holding onto the rear of a very large goat. Thinking of Connie, He gave a mighty pull and hoisted himself onto the creature's back again. It immediately began to shift once more, and Tommy again found himself a dozen feet in the air on the back of a mighty black stallion, eyes blazing gold like lanterns in the night. "To Connie!" Tommy cried again, this time kissing the puka's side with his iron spurs. Immediately, the creature veered to the right, picking a new path among the trees. His stride slowed, and Tommy found it much easier to hang on.
"There we go, Puka," he said. "You saved her from the wolves, now help me save her from the queen."
The Puka carried on begrudgingly, still occasionally trying to buck him off, forcing Tommy to touch him again with the spurs.
"Come on now, I don't want to hurt you," Tommy said, and then he was struck by a sudden idea.
"You like causing mischief, right? What would cause more than crashing the queen's party?"
The Puka slowed for a second, and then it turned, staring at Tommy with those big golden eyes. And then it winked. Through the invisible veil that separates the fairy world from our own, Connie was walking with the queen's retinue, which she had learned was a fancy word for friends and advisors. It was a moving party, following a gentle path that wound through the prettier parts of the Fey Forest. It was breathtakingly beautiful, though the plants were strange to Connie, bigger and brighter and queerly colored, and the company was stranger still. There were elves and fairies and fauns and a few things that Connie had no name for. They were all jolly, though, happy and chatty and obsessed with their new human friend. She told them stories of the human cities and of her life of song and dance at the tavern. They told her wild tales of the Fae, stories that took place high in treetop cities and deep in caves of glittering crystals. The night wore on, and as the moon rose full and round, Connie heaved a heavy sigh.
"What's wrong, me human friend?" the queen asked, walking beside her. "Not enjoying the party?"
"No, it's not that," Connie said. "You've been wonderful. It's New Year's Eve, and I always celebrate it with Tommy. I just miss him terribly."
"No worries, child," said the queen,
who had heard all about Tommy from the singing fairy.
"I have a feeling you won't have to wait much longer."
And then, from deep in the forest, there came a distant beat.
"What? What's that?" Connie asked.
"I think that's your New Year's date," the queen replied.
The beat grew louder and louder, a thunder now, and with a cry of, "Connie!" Tommy and the Puka burst from the woods. Without breaking stride, they rode through the queen's party, a fury of hooves and churned earth.
"Connie, your hand!"
Smiling wide, Connie threw up her hand. Tommy caught it as they passed and pulled her onto the Puka behind him, the creature shrinking helpfully. Once they had her, the Puka bounded again, sending them crashing back into the forest.
"Thanks for everything," Connie called over her shoulder.
"Of course, dear," the queen called back. "Come visit any time now."
As the Puka and the couple disappeared into the trees, the fairy queen turned back to her party, dabbing at her eyes.
"Ah, humans in love. I just love a good rescue."
Back at the tavern, the Puka dropped Connie and Tommy by the door.
"Thanks, Puka,"
said Tommy, clapping the creature on the neck.
"Thank you, Puka," said Connie.
The Puka nodded its head and shifted again, this time into a bird that fluttered away into the trees. They watched it go, Connie leaning back into Tommy's chest.
"Believe in Pukas now, love?" Connie asked.
"Surely I do, darling," Tommy replied, holding her tight. "Surely I do."
And thanks to the strange magic of how time passes in the fairy world, they found it was only just after dinner. They opened up O'Cullen's Tavern for New Year's Eve, its first opening in weeks, and when the town heard that Connie had been found alive and well, they all showed up to celebrate. They all spent the night together, celebrating, drinking and eating and dancing and laughing. Of course, no one danced as hard or sang as loud as Tommy and Connie. And above, among the rafters, a dark shape looked down. It was a cat, sleek and black, with white feet and a white blaze on its forehead. It looked about, taking in all the celebration. and, satisfied, strutted softly into the night. The End. Today's story, The Great Pooka Rescue, was an adaptation of a traditional Irish story written for you by Daniel Hines and performed for you by me, Amanda Weldon, with a song by us both. If you would like to support Stories Podcast and receive a thank you in a future episode, please visit patreon.com/stories and make a pledge. Then send an email to Amanda at storiespodcast.com and let us know who to thank. And don't forget to vote for us for Best Kids and Family Podcast on the iHeartRadio website or at storiespodcast.com/vote. Thanks for listening! Hey, Prime members! You can listen to Stories Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today! Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus Kids in Apple Podcasts. Grown-ups, before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.